Our Constitution, even the freedoms that we love so dearly. Protect your freedoms. Go to stoptheftaa.org. Then let Congress know that the FTAA is not an option for America. Stoptheftaa.org and keep America free.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Anything changed now? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a stay?
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Thanks for joining us tonight, Tuesday night, the 17th of May in the year 2005. I didn't hear anything when I called in. My clock must be needing a new battery because I must have dialed in late. Hope you had a lovely day today. I had a lovely day today. Got a call from a friend, and we had a long conversation. And I have a headset telephone, so I spent the entire afternoon taking plants off the, hanging plants off the ceilings and taking them outdoors and hanging them and arranging them outside on the front porch. And so it was a doubly delightful day here. Cold. Cold 60 is what it was. Anyway, we're going to tonight... I don't believe I did this. We're going to, our spiritual message tonight, first of all, is another from the Course in Miracles. This is from the text, page 475. The sight of Christ is all there is to see. The song of Christ is all there is to hear. The hand of Christ is all there is to hold. There is no journey but to walk with Him. And folks, it's going to be about 30 seconds of silence because I left my material in the kitchen, and I apologize for this.
Roll away.
Thank you, Nicholas.
The roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Anything changed at all? Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind?
Okay. I'm back with you, and thank you, Nicholas, for filling in that blank space. Folks, last night I was reading to you from an article on what exactly, what is, it's titled, What Do We Really Know About Adolf Hitler? And I'm going to pick this up tonight. And as I told you last night, one of the reasons that I'm sharing this with you is because of the lies that we, our history told us, taught us nothing. And of course we know that the victors always write the history. I know that there's a lot that we don't know. And if we weren't there personally, then there is research that we do and reading that we do. And as Alan Watt told us, when we read enough from enough various varied authors and we find the same thread running through much of it, well, then we know that there's truth there, and there's never truth, all the truth in any one thing that we ever read. But I want you to hear this. This is was written in 1938, a short sketch of Adolf Hitler's life. It says, on March 23, 1933, the Führer asked for 4 years in which he could put into practice his measures for the restoration of the German nation. The law, and I'm getting a phone call, and I'm thinking, I better grab that because it could be somebody trying to call in and calling the wrong number. Hold on just a sec, folks. Hello? Who's this? Who? Becky? You probably got the wrong number. Oh, okay. All right. That was the wrong number. Sorry for that interruption. All right. On March 23, 1933, the Führer asked for 4 years in which he could put into practice his measures for the restoration of the German nation. The law, which gave him unlimited powers for this purpose, was constitutionally passed by Parliament. After the expiry of this period, when he had given a public account of what had been done and called for a plebiscite, the nation applauded his efforts unanimously and sanctioned his stewardship by giving 99% of the total electoral vote in his favor. Of course, see, there only a German citizen could vote, folks. Not illegal aliens, not the communists that infiltrated Germany coming out of the USSR, just German citizens. Mm-hmm. Makes a big difference, doesn't it? So the people applauded his efforts unanimously and sanctioned his stewardship by giving 99% of the total electoral vote in his favor. No democracy throughout the world or through the course of history has ever given a statesman a similar vote of confidence. This overwhelming unanimity is giving judgment on the policy of the Führer was the deserved fruit of the tireless and successful efforts which he had made on behalf of the country and the people. Here, if ever, the voice of the people could indeed be called the voice of God. One of the first measures which the Führer enacted was that which established legislative and administrative unity throughout the Reich, replacing the governments of the various federative states and their legislatures by a strong central government in Berlin. At the same time, parliamentary parties were dissolved and the National Socialist Party remained the sole trustee of the political will of the people. It became a dictatorship, folks. For the first time in German history, the division between political interests and government interests was abolished. The problem of unemployment was then tackled in a vigorous manner. And remember, as I told you, for those of you who may not know, that when Adolf Hitler became chancellor, the country was mired in a terrible depression. Out of work, homeless. The banks had repossessed so many homes that millions of people were homeless. And so the problem of unemployment was tackled, it says here, in a vigorous manner. As a result of large-scale measures, trade and industry were revived and thrived as well, so well that today, this was in 1938, this was written, today there is no longer any unemployment in Germany. The Führer enacted laws against racial degeneration, which definitively prevent the further propagation of the unfit and mentally deficient or unhealthy, who were costing the country 200 million marks annually for support and attendance. A law was also passed to prevent the further mongrelizing of the German people through intermixture with the Jews, who are of a totally different racial stock. Now, see, the Jews have their own laws, don't they, folks? Their own laws, their religion, according to Moses Mendelssohn, Talmudism, Judaism, is not a law. He said it is a law religionized. And they have their brand of racism, if you would, because they are not supposed to marry out of their race, religion. That's difficult to figure out, isn't it? I mean, it couldn't be race. Sammy J. Davis Jr. became a Jew. I think Marilyn Monroe, didn't she become a Jew because she married one? So it has nothing to do with race, I guess. A further series of laws, especially those laying down price regulations for agricultural products and the law establishing hereditary farms, improved the position of the agricultural classes and prepared the way for more prosperous times. Today, they're destroying the farmers, the small independent farmers, folks, aren't they? In favor of the huge mega businesses. Trade unions, with their class war and policy of class hatred, were dissolved and replaced by the German Labor Front, an organization which embraces every worker in Germany under the aegis of the ideal of work as a factor that raises the dignity of human nature rather than lowers it. The National Socialist Welfare Organization, already founded by the National Socialist Party before it had acquired supreme political power, has been greatly enlarged. In conjunction with the Winter Help, it has become an eloquent expression of the spirit of ready sacrifice, which inspires the whole nation in dealing with problems relating to the poor and those who need help of one kind or another. The organization of the youth, the Reich Labor Service, and, quote, strength through joy, are now making institutions which have been established in response to the creative will of the Führer. A cultural policy has been adopted, whereby a cleansing process has not only abolished every distorted and degenerative kind of Bolshevik art, but has at the same time brought about a revival of genuine German art and fostered its development in every direction. German artists have again come into their rightful place. The Führer himself, an enthusiast for architecture, has not only planned various gigantic building projects, but has also largely designed and supervised their erection personally. Those acquainted with the intentions which Adolf Hitler had in mind knew that he would not rest content with merely restoring order in the German domestic situation. He regarded it as one of his paramount tasks to reestablish German prestige abroad. Having personally experienced to the full the horrors of modern warfare, he has lost no opportunity of emphasizing his absolute love for peace and his desire for an understanding with Germany's former enemies. But at the same time, he has come forward as the unflinching champion of German honor and freedom. For Adolf Hitler, therefore, there could be no question of rest or contentment until the shackles of dishonorable treaties were shattered and until Germany once again resumed her rightful position of equality among the nations supported by a powerful army. Not only that, but also as a strong factor in maintaining peace and in readiness to defend European culture against the destructive forces of Bolshevism. When we consider the changes which have taken place in Germany since January 30, 1933, and review the problems that are still being resolutely attacked and solved for the benefit of the whole country, it is no exaggeration to say that we are confronted with a veritable miracle, which is the product of a great and indestructible faith. For it is this faith in Germany's future which has inspired the soul of Adolf Hitler, the unknown soldier of the Great War. That would be World War I, folks. And it is this same faith which has given life and shape and purpose to the National Socialist Party. An unknown individual founded a party, and from this small band of men, enduring many trials and tribulations, there sprang a people's movement and finally a new German Reich. To understand all this, one must understand and appreciate the character and personality of Adolf Hitler himself. Broad-minded and big-hearted and just, capable of bringing iron logic to the support of his arguments, judicious and courageous in making decisions, and yet at the same time always prepared to share the sorrows and joys which fall to the list of his co-workers, of his co-workers. These are the qualities that link men inseparably to him. He has the magnetic appeal of the genuine orator and has the power of making his audience feel that he is voicing their thoughts and speaking for them. And that probably is because he himself has come from the people and is able to think and feel with them. And it is for this reason that the German youth has gathered so enthusiastically around him. In his personal requirements, Hitler is extremely modest. He does not eat meat or take alcoholic drinks, nor does he smoke. This is simply because he feels it suits his health better to be abstemious in regard to these things. His movement has restored the nation to its old position of honor. Because of this achievement, and because he himself has the qualities of the born leader, he has become the idol of the whole nation. They thank him for their national renaissance, the restoration of their honor and their prestige, for their freedom and their bread, and so they have willingly placed their future in his hands, trusting unconditionally to the wisdom of his leadership. When he mentioned the winter help program, or whatever they called it, I read about that, folks. The first year of his chancellorship, they did this because of all the homeless people, and he had made a promise that no child in Germany would sleep other than in a bed. And the people from all over the country, they had gathering points where people brought blankets and beds, and they had trucks that would drive them out and deliver them. It went on until even out way out in the rural areas, that the people, as poor as they were because of the Depression, which, of course, happened and took place under the Weimar Republic, when the nation was totally controlled by Jews. And when I use that word, it's because that's what they call themselves. I am not anti-Semitic. This is history. This is history that we're talking about, folks. The economic system, the educational system, the media, the press, the entertainment, and the businesses, the government. There was no aspect of German life that they didn't control. And it was a mess. And I want you to take a look at the U.S. of A today, at the so-called neocons that are in control of the U.S. government and in the highest offices and on the benches in the Supreme Court and in the federal courts and in the local courts. And look at the mess. And what a difference. And that would be one of the reasons, I would imagine, why Adolf Hitler is vilified constantly to the point where, as I said before, you would think he's running for office again. And one of the reasons that I wanted to do this, because it seems that almost everything you read that I get, so many pieces that I get, refer, when they refer negatively to a nation, they refer to, quote, Nazi Germany. It wasn't Nazi, it was National Socialism. And you know that during his chancellorship, until the war, tourism was alive and well in Germany. You know, all these movies that we saw, it's imprinted in our minds. That's why it's so difficult to take this, or to, I used to think that Adolf Hitler was the devil incarnate. I literally did. And then all those movies, those Hollywood movies we saw, but my, who controls Hollywood, folks? Who made all those movies? With the Gestapo clomping around in their boots, stopping people, asking for papers, etc. I've read accounts of people who traveled into Germany during that time. They traveled freely. Now, go to Israel today, and you're going to be guided around Israel. You're not going to get to see what's really going on over there. And if you're a Christian, you have no rights whatsoever over in Israel. And with the passage of the new, what would we say, all continent, it's not a national ID that the U.S. Congress just passed that was tucked away in an $82 billion appropriation for more money for the war in Iraq. It's our new Union of the Americas ID, folks, according to reports. Maybe I shouldn't talk about it until I get my copy of the conference report and see what's actually in it. But every report I've read says that it is going to be acceptable and harmonized with Canada's and Mexico's, actually entire South America. You know, there are countries in South America that have been using American dollars for a long time, several years now, awaiting this union. And you wonder why Adolf Hitler wanted National Socialism to bring Germany and the German people back. There's some more here, and I'm going to keep going. This, what I'm reading to you, by the way, is December 2004 from Insight. Insight, excuse me. And so I'm just going to keep reading here. This is that was the end of that short sketch of Adolf Hitler and his life. This is titled The War Crimes Trial with Hindrance. Last October, which would have been October of 2003, as this is written in December 2004. Last October, a war crimes trial started in Munich, Germany. The so-called criminal is an ex-Czechoslovakian, Mr. Ladislav Nizmansky, who immigrated to Germany and is a German citizen since 1996. Mr. Nizmansky is accused. I'm going to call him Mr. N, okay? So we don't have to keep saying the name all the time. Mr. N is accused of being a captain in a special military unit, Edelweiss, during World War II, whose job it was to go after partisans operating behind German military fighting forces. Mr. N, a Slovak by birth, is accused of being responsible, of having ordered the execution of 164 innocent civilians in January 1945, and 18 out of them were Jews. The trial took place in Czechoslovakia in 1962, and Nizmansky was found guilty and sentenced to death in absentia after many so-called eyewitnesses testified to his crimes. But luckily, Germany never sent him to Czechoslovakia to be executed, and he's still alive now. But now, 60 years later, a state prosecutor in Munich, Germany, wants to bring Nizmansky to justice in Germany, and he is counting on the testimonies of the so-called eyewitnesses from 1962. But what a disappointment it must have been when the prosecution team visited those eyewitnesses and did not get anywhere. Some of the eyewitnesses were totally confused, and others told a totally different story than they did in 1962. Some of the eyewitnesses did not even remember the incident at all. One witness, a born Slovak, Jan Rapaski, now 78 years of age, had accused Nizmansky in 1962 of those crimes, and now in 1993 had revised his previous testimony and claimed he was nowhere near the supposed crime area, and he did not witness anything of that kind. He also claimed that he was tortured in 1962 under the communist government in order to make those false statements, and he now refused to go to Germany and testify. The only witness who was willing to go to Germany was 81-year-old Ulrich Vestavel. Vestavel, we'll call him. He told the court that all the accusations against the accused were nothing more than a legend. All the accusations were invented by Slovak investigators to have the accused found guilty of crimes against humanity. Vestavel also claimed he was tortured to make those accusations in 1962, and he also claimed that his life was threatened if he did not obey. There is also a Slovakian historian, Jan Stanislav, the director of the Museum of the Slovak Uprise for Freedom and Independence. He claims he has proof that the accused Nizmansky was in no position to give orders at the time in 1945 because he was only a translator. The German court still continues that trial. The German Hempelmanner refused to leave the sinking ship. And this is from the National Zeitung, number 45, October 29th, 2004, folks. Amazing. And yet when a murderer, a charged and found guilty murderer, goes to Israel for asylum, when they try to get him deported back to the U.S. to pay for his crime. Israel says, too bad, we're not deporting him back because the statute of limitations is up. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Nicholas, if you're listening, could you come on the line, please? All right, folks, we're going to go on with this. The next heading here is there an end to it? It seems that in the last decade, Italy took the lead in going after so-called German war criminals of World War II, which has ended 60 years ago. Who do you think's behind all this, folks? There is no shortage of Italian war criminals, especially the Italian partisans who became brave in 1944 and 45 when the war was decided in their favor. Their excuse is, quote, war is war, and in war, things happen. The fact is, the Italian communist partisans kept their hands bloody even when the war was over. They murdered many of their own fellow citizens, and many of them were women. Some Italians... Let me grab this, folks. Hello? Who? Oh, I guess you have. Bye-bye. That's weird. Two wrong numbers within a half-hour period of time. Two different people asking for two different people. Some Italians showed what they were capable of, and it makes one wonder if those behind it all are really humans. The German politicians do what they do best. They sell out their own to please the world. The Italian military tribunal asked Germany to hand over a man who might have committed a war crime 60 years ago in Italy. Why the Italians now come 60 years later, God only knows. But the Germans in charge obeyed the Italians' demand. The trial was set to be held in La Spezia, in northern Italy. The accused was an ex-lieutenant of the German Waffen-SS. While all this was going on, the accused man charged with war crimes was living in an old age care home in Niedersachsen, Germany. His name was Johann Karl. I didn't push my record button on this doggone. I'm glad that you can get tapes of the, or CDs of the broadcast from WFAR. I just noticed that I hadn't hit my record button here. I like to have copies of the broadcasts anyway, but anyway, let me go on here, folks. So the man's name, who's living in an old age care home in Niedersachsen, Germany, is Johann Karl Schiffmann. He was accused of being responsible for the arrest of 60 innocent civilians in Italy in December 1944. The news media in Germany went overboard as usual when it comes to accused, not proven guilty yet, Germans. Hello.
Hello, Jackie. Are you taking calls for your show?
Sure.
Good.
Who are we talking to?
Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Hi. So you are making some wonderful points here, Jackie. Did you ever hear anyone talking about the Japanese? And they roasted people on a spit, a man on a spit, after the war was ended.
No.
They didn't quit fighting. The way you talk about the Germans are singled out above any other people. They're singled out and talked about and ridiculed, and there's many Germans that are confused because the United States, when we went over there, my dad witnessed it. He said he cried. We bombed Dresden, and the people that were there were mostly refugees.
Your dad was there?
My dad was there.
He was he part of it or witnessed it?
He witnessed it. He saw the planes, wherever some of the guys were stationed, he saw the planes take off and he knew it was going to happen.
And the flames that shot a mile into the sky.
And the people were like jelly. And nobody ever talks about that. Or there were a few folks talking about it, but it was terrible. But we can blame Germany for everything, but we don't take, you know, we do not say that the United States, we don't talk about our war crimes. And I think it's a shame because so many things are just ignored. And they must have feelings about what we did.
Well, I'll tell you what, the German people have been so brainwashed. They live in guilt, many of them.
That's true.
And I understand Hans Schmidt, who was in the SS, by the way, the SS Panzer Grenadier. And he wrote a book about it, Carla. And he said in his last letter that there's good news because the people in Germany, many of them at least, are waking up and they're tired of living in guilt of crimes that were never committed. But these people have been paying reparations since the end of the war. And, of course, it all goes over to Israel. It's in the billions of dollars, and of course it all comes off the back of the German people, not the Jews that have immigrated there, but the German people themselves.
Well, we made them pay such high war crimes after World War One. If we would have stayed out of it and let them make peace with their French, you know, the people they were fighting there in World War One, but we didn't. We interfered and made them pay such high reparations. They couldn't do it, and inflation went up horrible in their country, and a lot of people starved. And then when Hitler came in, he was considered Man of the Year by Time magazine. He took over, and they were nationalistic. But the German people, everybody was there, Jackie. most countries were very nationalistic. That was not something that was only in Germany.
I know it, but after World War One, you know, they took so much land, agricultural land, and chunked it off, gave to France, and created Poland and Czechoslovakia and whatever.
Yeah, because the Czechs didn't want to. I'm part Czech.
And they under the Treaty of Versailles, they were allowed not to have a military. Where around them, the Soviet Union and the other nations were building their war machines.
Right. I think Hitler was being in the army. He witnessed a lot of the mustard gas. I guess it wasn't he mustard. Didn't he have mustard gas himself?
I really don't know, honey.
That's what I've heard, that he had an injury and he didn't like gas. That's what I was told.
Well, he didn't like war. And in our website at sweetliberty.org, Carla,
mm-hmm.
In the section, How Wars Are Made, Behind the Scenes, you can read the German White Paper, and it's a chronological review of all of the efforts that were made to come to agreements and not to have war. And they say that Germany started the war because they went over there to Poland, and what he did is go over to free the people from Danzig, who were actually living under communist rule in a new country called Poland, in their own homes, that they maybe their ancestors had lived in for generations, but they weren't in Germany anymore. And they were being abused, they were being killed, they were being financially suppressed, and it was all being done because they knew that these actions were going to result. And and at the same time, I don't know if you're aware of this, and some of our listeners may not be, but right at that time when he was trying to get these agreements with the Polish puppet, whoever was in charge then, England made a pact with Poland and said, we are going to be your ally, and any nation that attacks you is attacking England. And from some articles and reports that I've read, the Polish troops were actually firing across the German lines before anything ever really happened. But as soon as that happened, and then the Germans began defending themselves and fighting back, that was when war was declared by England against Germany. And we've all been told in history, I believed it, Germany started World War One, and Germany started World War Two. And in the book, it is in, I believe, it is in one of Captain A.H.M. Ramsey's The Nameless War. It might have been in there. That it was the evening of the same day that Winston Churchill became Prime Minister that England began dropping bombs on Germany. Until then, not a bomb was dropped. Adolf Hitler tried to outlaw bombing. He tried to outlaw air warfare. He was hoping that if there had to be wars, that they would not involve innocent women, children, and civilians. But all this is not known, Carla.
Well, they have managed to rewrite history, because when a group I was in used to get together, I was an Birch group, but we had access to some books, European books, and many of the ex-soldiers, you know, high colonels and generals, wrote memoirs, Jackie, and they questioned a lot of things that went on here, and why decisions were made, particularly the United States allying themselves with the communist countries, since we claim to be, you know, a people of God, we
yep.
to be Christians.
Yep. And before the U.S. legally, or we should say, yeah, I guess, by when Congress declared war, but before then, under the Lend-Lease Act, when allegedly that was set up to manufacture war machines and materials and et cetera for Germany and et cetera. It all went over to the Soviet Union. And there is another book in that same section, How Wars Are Made Behind the Scenes. It's called from Captain, or yeah, Captain Major Jordan's Diaries. And Major Jordan was from, he was a World War I veteran. And when World War II broke out, he volunteered. He was a successful businessman. And he was told to report to UN Depot Number 8 at an airport in New Jersey. And there were all these Russian, huge Russian airplanes that all this stuff was being loaded onto. They eventually took it, I think, to Dakota, if I'm not mistaken. But Major Jordan had diaries, and this is what his book is all about. So they had the American people working triple shift. And this was wonderful, you know. Finally, after a long depression, the people were finally back to work. And all of this was going over to the Soviet Union, including, according to Major Jordan, printing presses and paper to print money that they could draw directly from the U.S. Treasury. And there was allegedly that he could account for to at least $250,000 that they printed up. And it all came off the backs of the American people for taxes.
Yep. And there's still, can you imagine how much a day that this new war that we're in now, or I should say multiple wars, are costing? But I don't know how people can survive, because...
Well, I'll tell you what they're doing. They're cutting everything. You know, they're cutting the education, funding, all of the money from the states, from the local governments. And from the states goes to the federal government. It comes back, of course, with the strings attached, called government funds. And they're cutting the funds. I just read an article. They're cutting Medicaid. And these are, you know, for people who are disabled, who are cannot afford health care, et cetera. And they're saying that by doing this, and it's, the cuts are being made at the state level, of course, because the state chip in part of the funding of this, but they said this is going to save the Medicaid $60 billion over the next decade. Well, the U.S. Congress just appropriated $82 billion more for the war in Iraq, for the rebuilding, and that's all, of course, going to Halliburton and all of Bush's buddies, all of the elite. And that's how it's happening.
Absolutely. We, in this state that I'm in, the new governor.
Oh, yeah. In fact, the article I read about the Medicaid was specifically about Missouri. But what they said they found out when they did some searching is that it's happening pretty evenly across the board in all the states in this country.
Well, in this state, they had a big voter registration, and the governor, I mean, the current governor, who is now, I think, the lieutenant governor, made sure that all of the votes, you know, of course, they weren't Republicans, they were not registered, all the voters were registered. There's still a lot of possible suits against them.
Nothing will come from it. Nothing came.
Nothing will come from it.
No. And Carla, thank you for your call tonight. Honey, thank you. Bye-bye. I wanted to...
Hi, Jackie.
Hi. Yeah.
This is Nicholas.
Thanks, Nicholas.
How can I help you?
I want that phone number that you give where people can call and get the monthly broadcast for Sweet Liberty.
Oh, okay.
$25 a month on CD.
Okay, yeah, that's...
559-781-3773. 3773. Yes. Thank you. Both nights, I've been wanting to write it down and didn't have my pencil handy.
Okay.
I can only say it one time. So I'll be sure and repeat it after the break.
Okay. Thank you, Jackie. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, in case you didn't get that number, and if you would like the broadcast, this is just a wonderful, to me, on a CD, If you have a CD or a DVD player, you can get a whole month's broadcast worth of broadcasts for $25. And if you're interested, the number is 559-781-3773. I'm glad that he's making them available for you. Okay, so let me get back to this. We were reading about the Italians. They wanted this guy deported, this old man in an old age care home, deported because he had been charged or accused of being responsible for the arrest of 60 innocent civilians in Italy in 1944. Isn't it insane? And think about that, the murderer who escaped to Israel, and Israel would not send him back because they said the statute of limitations was up. There's no statute of limitations for them, is there? The news media, it says in Germany, went overboard as usual when it comes to accused, not proven guilty yet, German so-called war criminals. Before the trial even started, the news media claimed that Mr. Shiffman was not only responsible for the arrest of 60 innocent civilians, but he also killed 11 of them just because he felt like it. Now let us have a closer look at the man who the Italians and the Germans were so desperate to put on trial 60 years after the alleged crime was committed. Mr. Carl Shiffman lived in an old age home because he could not look after himself anymore. He had a severe heart condition, and he suffered from Alzheimer's disease, which meant he had no idea about what was going on around him. It was very obvious he was not capable to defend himself, which the German government knew very well. But who cares when it comes to so-called war criminals from Germany? Mr. Shiffman had a stroke 10 days before the trial was supposed to start, and he was partly paralyzed, but even then, the witch hunt did not stop, and the Italians were set to go all the way. It almost seems that those manhunters have the genes of sharks. Once they smell blood, they just can't stop. The trial was finished the first day it started because Mr. Shiffman's heart stopped beating and he died. Now, doesn't that sound a little suspicious, folks? If he had Alzheimer's, he certainly wasn't. Didn't have a heart attack because of or a stroke, whatever, because of stress or concern. I wonder if they just gave him a shot, like they did Terry Schiavo. Just not that, but they did him quickly. They probably injected him with something. World War II was finally over. For Mr. Shiffman, he was 95 years of age when he died. Insight was first born as a result of information I learned at the first infamous Holocaust trial in 1985 in Toronto, Ontario. This trial is where Ernst Zundel was accused of knowingly spreading false news with his reprint of a booklet called Did 6 Million Really Die? The court system was trying to prove whether Ernst Zundel believed in what he had published or not. I received a wake-up call upon listening to the evidence that was presented to defend Zundel's position. The evidence was of the Holocaust that was said to have occurred during World War II in our history books. Zundel's witnesses and the Crown's witnesses presented evidence that must have confused everyone who hears it. At the same time, my daughter had returned from school after history class in tears. The topic was the Holocaust, and that the Germans were an awful people who gassed and killed 6 million Jews. She was absolutely embarrassed to be German and couldn't face her teasing classmates. Understanding her embarrassment and being the protective father that all fathers are. Hello? Tim, you're on the wrong line, honey, if you're calling in the broadcast. 3025 you want. Yep. Bye. Well, that was a caller calling the wrong number. Folks, if you want to call in, write this down and make a note after it. The call-in number for the broadcast is 570-537-3025. But that would be, you'd only call me on that number if you wanted to call in during the broadcast, because if I'm out of this room, I may not hear your call. So the call, the number, if you want to call me at home, I'm at home anyway, but my home phone rings anywhere in the house, I can hear it. And that phone number is 570-537-3035. But put a note there. 3025 is call in for the radio broadcast, and 3035 is the home number. Hello, Tim.
Yeah, hello?
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I was saying a thing you said about talking about Adolf Hitler earlier. I just want to make this quick.
You have to. We've got about 3 minutes
yeah,
here.
Yeah, one thing I was going to say, though, is that I think Hitler was his own worst enemy. He effed himself over. Oh, by the way, the government was, somebody in the Coast Guard, somebody was trying to mess with your program about 5-6 minutes ago. I'm hearing things sound like, and I'm hearing kids. And then before that, I'm hearing a little tweedling, like a some type of jammer or something. But
huh.
They were trying to do something. I don't know. It went away. Unless maybe it's just interference. But if it is, they're doing a good job.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. Wasn't coming from here.
No, it may not be coming from here. It could be coming from Maryland. I don't know. Or Costa. I don't know. But no, that happens. It's the same thing I heard with Cooper in the show. But what I was saying with Hitler is that you're talking about the Polish with the communists. Now, the thing about this is Hitler was no worse enemy because. When he went into Russia, you know, Napoleon tried to go into Russia. There was a lot of people that tried to conquer Russia. It never did work.
Adolf Hitler went into Russia because the Soviet Union was actually had already geared up for the war.
Right.
He knew they were going to be attacked, and rather than let them come into Germany, he went into Russia. They were already making military plane flights.
Right, but that's true. But see, and once he took over all of Poland, though, Hitler, Stalin thought that Hitler was his best customer, so he's not going to attack him anyway. And Stalin was worse than Hitler, by the way, as far as he's talking atrocities go. But here's the point. When Hitler did go into Russia, there were Russians on the coast there, on the border there, you know, I think just outside of Moscow. Or even when he went into Moscow.
We're out of time, honey.
Anyway, they hated communism, and they were going to help him, and
they joined his
army. On him and killed him.
No, he didn't.
Had an ally.
No, he didn't. Many of them joined his army. Another time. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I don't want to be rude, but we're out of time, folks. And we'll see you tomorrow night. Thank you. And God bless you. Good night. Have lovely dreams tonight.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order.